So while the room is filling up even more, thank you for that. I think it's time to start the session. So welcome, everybody. Thanks for joining. My session is called Continuous Delivery 3.0, and I realized that this morning when I stood up and I was preparing the last things on my slide, that is the third time on Tech Days that I will talk about continuous delivery. And that's not what the 3.0 is all about. So the first year I talked about how is continuous delivery going to reshape your company. So it was in the hype cycle upcoming. It was something that was going to be something important. So next year of last year, I talked about feedback loops. So how can you instrument a continuous delivery pipeline with feedback loops so that you can see what's happening inside your feedback and what's happening inside your pipeline and how can you act on it? And today I will talk about continuous delivery 3.0, what I like to call the next step. And as it goes with continuous delivery, everything needs to be faster. So this year I have 45 minutes instead of the 1 hour and 15 minutes the first time. So I have a challenge. So I apologize upfront when I need maybe some extra minutes. So it's really, really tight. So I will continue very fast. So my name is René van Osnabrugge. I'm ALM consultant at Experit. I worked there now for 1.5 years, and I help companies improving their software processes. The rest you can look up on the internet. All my details are there. The slides are shared, so I won't talk any further about me because it's about a session and I'm already in need of time. So the first thing I like to do, because I am a consultant, I want to get a baseline of my audience. So I would like to ask you to stand up. Thank you very much. And then we are going to do a baseline measurement of how loud you can clap. So I'm going to count to three, and then you clap your hands 5 times. And it's up to you how loud you clap, because that's the baseline. It's up to you. So I will count to three, and you clap 5 times, and I'll come back to that later on. So, 1, 2, 3. Thank you very much. So you can sit down and relax. And while you're sitting and going back to your relaxation mode, I will talk a little bit about digital disruption. So this is what's happening. And I heard Corey Sanders about in the keynote talking about it as well. Digital disruption is happening in the market. So traditional companies, original companies that have been around for many, many years are once of a sudden digital disrupted by companies that just do it differently. So a Uber that has a taxi business but owns no taxis at all. Airbnb that runs a hotel business but doesn't own any rooms. Facebook that runs a media business but doesn't own any content. So what is happening here? And why do those old companies do not seem able to react on it? And I think that the one thing that they differ from the traditional companies is that the older companies don't have IT as their business. So the new companies, they build their business around IT. They started with an idea, they implemented it with IT, and they built a business around it. Their core business is not a taxi business or a hotel business or a media business. Their core business is IT. So everything in the company is organized around IT to make it faster, smoother, and better. The traditional companies, however, are doing it differently. They have business, and the business is the core. And IT has always been a facilitating department within their business. So everything, especially in the early days, it was about money. IT shouldn't cost any money, because if it did, it would eat up from the business they were doing. And because those traditional companies are not able to react fast on the market, they are now being digital disrupted. So that's nothing new. It's going on for quite a while. And those companies already saw it. So they embraced Agile. And that's nothing new anymore. It's been around for about 10, 15 years already. And what you see in the market is that about 95% of the companies embraced Agile. So that would solve the problems. we are now able to develop software faster, because that was the bottleneck back then. They could not create, develop, and deliver software in a timely fashion. But now, the development process is quite streamlined. I think many companies still struggle with the implementation of Agile, and sure, many companies do still water Scrum fall, where they do a requirements project, and then they do the development in Scrum, and then they do the stabilization and test phase in many, many weeks after. But in the core, they look at Agile, and they are able to develop software, done software, in a matter of 2-3 weeks. But now the bottlenecks has shifted. So the companies that were first struggling with developing of software are now struggling with how are we going to get that software out to the customers. Because when you develop your software, but the value is there on a shelf gathering dust, then it does not add anything to your company. But delivering the software is something different than developing software. And that's not what Agile brought to them. Agile brought the development of software, but didn't say anything about how to streamline your processes and how to streamline your organization to be able to deliver the software to the doorstep of the customer. So instead of that, we have a big stock of finished features that are waiting for the next major release to come out in a year. And that's still a practice of the day. So, what is in the year plans of many companies? And maybe you can raise your hand who has this in the year plan. Oh, not that many. That's a bad sign. What I see at customers that they have continuous delivery in their year plan. I've been at a customer that had continuous delivery. We need to do this year. So I asked him, why? Yeah, because it's in the year plan. And then I asked, what is it? And he said, I don't know. It's something with delivery of software. So it seems logical and it seems to be quite easy to have that developed software delivered to the customers, but it's actually not. So the definition, what I told them as well, is about continuous delivery is a set of processes and tools to be able to develop and deliver software reliable and efficient. And if you look at it in a graphical way, this picture was created by a colleague of mine, this is a pipeline. And it's all about getting value into the pipeline that flows through the pipeline and in the end delivering value. And it's not the big whole big box of marbles or the big monolith that you push through the pipeline, but you do it feature by feature, piece by piece. And it doesn't really matter if it's a bug, it's a support item, or it's a new feature. You just throw everything through that same pipeline. And you instrument that pipeline with what we call feedback loops. So the red and the green valves in the pipeline are feedback loops. So the more feedback loops you can implement, the better. Because the earlier you know that something is not right, the earlier you can stop your pipeline and you can stop your delivery of your software. So the red valves, when something is red, for example, your unit test doesn't run, or your build doesn't compile, or your acceptance test doesn't finish, you want to drop that marble out and you want to monitor and learn it from it. And that's very important, because it's not only looking at it, okay, it didn't work and I'm going to fix it, because that's what many companies do, but it's all about how can I really get to the root cause of this error? How can I really fix this so that it won't ever, ever happen again, that this marble drops out? And when you do that, so if you instrument your pipeline with feedback loops and you really get to the root cause of your mistakes, then you can improve your pipeline and then you can learn from it. And when you have learned from it, it goes up and it goes back into the pipeline and you can do it again. So you won't do any rollbacks in a utopic situation, but you will just drop it again into your pipeline and it follows the same process and you deliver again. So to demonstrate how I can do that in Visual Studio Team Services, and I will do this very, very quick, is to show you in a glance how to set up a continuous delivery pipeline with continuous integration and continuous deployment within Visual Studio Team Services. So when I open my Visual Studio Team Services account, I have my dashboards. Of course, I have my code. That's where it all starts, of course, the code. And this is a Git repo. And who uses VSTS? Okay. And TFS, the rest? Okay. Ah, well, that's okay. So for people maybe who didn't see it or who are maybe on an older version of TFS, this is the code hub in VSTS. You can view your Git repositories here. You can view the branches in your Git repositories. And what is really great of this one is that you can see the code of your Git repos within the browser, and you can even edit it, add files, and just commit it back into your repo directly. So that is a very convenient way to make, for example, a quick fix. Instead of having everything on your development machine, you can do simple changes here in the browser. So after that, when you have your code into your repository, it's time to set up a build. So you go to the build tab, and I switch to new navigation, so you can switch that on. So for people who think, why did this change? It's just something that you can flip on in your settings. I can just open up a build definition. I can also create a new one, of course, but for the sake of time, I will just open up an existing one. Oh, sorry, this is the release. It's not the right one. So I will open this build definition. First thing that you need to do when you create it is you point to a repository and a branch that you want to build, and then you add steps to your pipeline. So what am I going to do in this pipeline? So I'm going to get the sources, that's done automatically. I'm going to build it, I'm going to compile it, and I'm going to implement some feedback loops. For example, I'm going to run some unit tests here, or I'm going to check some files if they're present, or I'm going to check a machine if it's up, or I don't know, whatever you like. When you go to the triggers tab, you can really easily set up continuous integration. So that's the definition. So you have continuous delivery, continuous integration, and continuous deployment, and it's all been used, mixed with each other. So we have the first step in the pipeline is continuous integration, getting your sources into your build pipeline. I've done something, I've checked it in, how can I validate that what I've did in source control, that it works? So every check-in, you want to be validated by a build. And that can be done by just pushing this checkbox to save it. And now it looks at the branch where you check in. If something checks in, this build will trigger, and it will perform all the steps into this build pipeline. After you have built, you have a package, a box, is what I like to call it, a box. And that box doesn't change. That box is going to move all the way to production. Because when it changes, you are not sure if the things that you tested are actually delivered to the customer. So if you rebuild again because you did a merge to another branch or something, your code has potentially changed, and that's not what you want. So you build it, you have a box, and you pick up that box and you move it through the release pipeline. And that's what you can set up here on the release tab. So if I move to the release tab and I pick up my release definition, you see quite the same structure. You can add tasks, all kinds of tasks, PowerShell, Azure PowerShell, DeckPack, Chef, Docker, Hockey App, whatever you like. And if you want more, you can go to the marketplace and download other extensions into your pipeline. But this release also has the notion of environments, or what I like to call them stages. So you do specific action in a certain stage of your pipeline. So if you have an environment, it's really linked to maybe physical servers or virtual machines. But I like to call it in a stage. In the test stage, I want to perform specific actions. So in this stage, I'm now doing simple stuff. I'm deploying this website to Azure, and I'm going to send an email, hello from Tech Days. In the next stage, in the staging stage, I'm doing the same. But you can imagine that I can do other stuff there. Maybe I want to run some load testing or acceptance testing or extra validation within my pipeline. So you can have multiple stages, and you can have approvers on this stage. So if you want to assign an approver, you can say, okay, it only lands on the test environment or in the test stage when somebody really approves that it's going to land there. And you can do that upfront, or you can do that later on. When it's there, you want to have it validated that everything that's there is okay. You can also of course, don't do it at all, and then it's just automatically deployed. And when you switch on this one, continuous deployment, then this one will react on that build that finishes successfully. So then I check in my code, my build will trigger, the build will finish, and it will trigger my release, and it will just go forward. And that's by just matter of pressing the checkbox. So then we have saw continuous integration and continuous deployment. So what is continuous delivery then? And I think that's in the middle of continuous integration and deployment. So deployment, you will automatically move to production without any manual action in between. And continuous delivery is that you can do it, but on demand. You choose when to do it. And that's all about that you are in control when you are going to do a specific release. Going back to the slides. As you saw, it was not that hard to create that build pipeline. You can create one, you can point to a Visual Studio solution, and it builds. And probably it will do something with the release as well. But many companies have a big solution with many, many projects in it. And what you usually see is that they try to squeeze their big solution with all those projects and all those dependencies through the pipeline. And sure, you can do it, but you have to change something. You have to maybe get some air out of the tires, or you have to maybe cut away some bricks from the tunnel in order to push that truck through the tunnel. And you can do it, but optimization is needed. You need to do something about it. Otherwise, it just won't work. So, in terms of optimization, let's stand up again. And now I'd like to ask you to do the same trick, but only louder. So I want you to make more noise. So I count to three, and then you do it. One, two, three. Thank you very much. It was louder. You optimized. Great. So, before I tell my results as a consultant, I'd like to tell you the legend of the five monkeys. So there has been a story in a book that's about five monkeys in a cage. They put five monkeys in a cage and they strung up a banana on top of the cage. So, and every time when a monkey tries to get to the banana, they spray all the monkeys with ice cold water. So, all the monkeys tried, and all the monkeys got wet, so they didn't try. Then they swapped the monkey. A new monkey in, one old out, and they did nothing. The new monkey, yeah, you guess what he did? It tried to get up to the banana, and the other monkeys were attacking him. You are not going to get that one, because we are getting wet from that. And then they swapped the second one, and the third one, and the fourth one, and the fifth one. And there were all new monkeys in the cage. But no one got up to the banana to get it. Because this is how we do it in this cage. This is how we do it in this company. We are not going to change something because we might get wet. And I think that if we look at continuous delivery 3.0, that's what it's all about. I ask you to make more noise, and you clapped louder. But that's not really sustainable in terms of optimizing continuously. You can maybe clap four times, five times, maybe six times louder, but in the end it will stop. To improve even more, to get really, really better, you might want to rethink what you did. So making more noise is not about clapping louder, maybe. Maybe you can do some other stuff. This is how we do it in our company, is in the same concept. We do things because you are used to doing it, and we are optimizing what we are already doing, instead of stepping back and looking at how can we do it maybe differently. And a good way to start is, why do we do things? So if you look at it, you can maybe think, why are we as a company doing the things that we are doing? Probably there was a very, very good reason a few years ago, maybe a few months ago. But if you just take that for granted and never look at what you are going to do with that next step, then you will always sub-optimize. And I think a good example is, for example, virtual machines. Back in the days, we had physical servers. Then we have virtual machines. And when we had physical servers, they were very, very, very expensive. So we had people guarding them, the IT operations guys. They were guarding the server. No one could access that server because that was an expensive server. Software that was on it should be guarded with your lives. So those people were there. But now we have maybe cloud machines. We can spin up thousands of machines. So they are not expensive anymore, but still, we have people guarding those machines. And why? Is that still relevant? Maybe it is. But in many cases, the things that you're already doing are not that relevant anymore. So try to think about your process in that way. So what I want to do now is I want to walk you through a few examples that I have to see what is happening in terms of scenarios that I encounter at customers and how you can maybe rethink your strategy when it comes to doing it. So the first one is we have too many manual tests. So it's hard for us to go to continuous delivery because we have a pile of manual tests that we have to execute every single regression. And it takes about 3 or 4 weeks maybe to execute all those manual tests. So what do you think that most companies do when it comes to optimizing this process? Automating the tests, sure. That's a good strategy. But how are they going to automate the tests? They are going to automate the test in many cases by buying a very expensive GUI test automation tool or something like Coded UI or Protractor or whatever GUI interface test tool that there is present in the marketplace. And they are going to automate their manual tests. Sure, that works. But everybody knows that manual testing, automation of manual testing that goes to the GUI is maybe not the most efficient way because GUI testing, especially automated GUI testing, is quite expensive, it's hard to do, it's hard to maintain, and it's also very brittle because when something changes in the UI, your test might fail. So the maintenance of your test is very hard to do. So is buying a GUI tool to automate all your manual tests the most optimal solution? Yeah, it is a solution, and it is optimization of the things that you already do, but I think it's better to look at the Agile test pyramid. So if you are investing in automating tests, you might want to take a look at the Agile test pyramid that goes maybe the bottom, the big amount of tests in our company are automated unit tests. So they are cheap to create, they are small, you can easily maintain them, and it's very fast to execute them. On the middle layer, you can invest in API testing. You don't have to test the full API if you have a legacy application, but you can put something in, let it do the work, and validate if what comes out is still the same thing. That's not very hard to do, but it's automated and it's much more easier to maintain than, for example, an automated GUI test. And on top of the pyramid, sure, you have some automated GUI tests for maybe some end-to-end scenario. Does my program still react on this button or that button? Is this still disabled, etc.? But you're not going to test functionality. And then you have time left to do exploratory testing. And that sounds nice, but I hear you think, we have a big monolith, we can never do unit testing. And I'm not saying that you have to unit test every single piece of code that you've already written. But you can start with writing unit tests for every new bit that you add to the code. Because your code already works, so you don't have to test it everything. But you can test your new stuff. And you can maybe test the things you change instead of having everything tested. So that's a way of approaching the test automation. Another scenario, we can only release when we are ready. We have many teams, we have a big application, everything is dependent on each other. And we cannot just release, it's hard for us to do. Because everything is linked to each other. And team A is not finished, but team B is waiting for the feature of team A, etc., etc. So what happens? Companies use branching strategies. Who uses branching strategies? Okay. How to optimize it? Git is maybe an optimization because, yeah, that's distributed. Branches are smaller, easier to create, so that's a way. Maybe we can lighten the amount of branches. We can do maybe some automations on branch creations to have that isolation. But you can also look at feature toggles. You can also say, okay, I'm going to instrument my code with feature toggles so that I can always create something new, but it's just behind an if statement. It's not visible for the teams. And in many cases, it's only you can do that on the front end level, and not everything in the back end. And if you have a number of unit tests in place, you can validate if it still works. So instead of optimizing your branching strategy, you can maybe look at feature toggles and just enable things if you need it. And that moves releasing from a functional practice, or from a technical practice to a functional practice. Because now deployment is equal to release. And when you separate the concerns and you have feature toggles in place, you can always deploy, but the feature is not visible. And the business people can decide when the feature becomes visible. So all your deadlines or release events or whatever, you have that solved. And if you want to know more about feature toggles, canary releasing, dark launching, etc., my colleague Marcel de Vries has a great session on it tomorrow that goes into depth about how to implement feature toggles, how to go with dark launching, canary releasing, and stuff to just make this happen. Then another one, we can only release everything at once. We have a dependent solution. We have many libraries that we use in many projects, and if something changes in one library, yeah, that other library has to change as well, because yeah, the API changed, I did a contract, whatever. There are multiple approaches to this one, but you have to rethink your architecture when it comes to continuous delivery of a big monolith. That's really, really hard to do. But if you split it, so for example, something simple as NuGet, that, okay, my components, I will not add it as a reference in a project, so I have a solution of 25 or 50 or 60 or 70 projects, but I will create NuGet packages out of them, and I will version those NuGet packages so that the teams can decide if they want to consume the newer version of my NuGet package or the older version of my NuGet package, and the interfaces don't break. On the architecture part, there's also that whole microservices approach that you can do, where you split up your application in smaller bits, autonomous with data inside it, so that you can really release it separately instead of everything all at once. And the last one, we need a platform that is flexible. So what you see at companies, they came from physical servers, they went to virtual machines, and now the next step is for the most companies going to IaaS on Azure, for example, or a cloud. They are going to move their virtual machines into the cloud. And sure, that's a great step because you can easily scale, the costs are more insights into the costs, etc., etc. But is it the next step? So when you are going to take the move, maybe you should have a look at container technology. Maybe that is a better approach because, sure, you need servers in the cloud, but if you are going to do some revamping, maybe you should try to get your applications to work inside a container, because then it doesn't not matter anymore on which platform it lands. It doesn't matter if it's in Azure, it doesn't matter if it's in Amazon, on-premise, as long as your platform can run containers, you can run your applications, because your container does not only contain your application, it also contains your configuration and your environment. So that is a really powerful step. And I think that containers will revolutionize the way how we deploy. And to just make a clear view, now we have something like continuous deployment. we have source control, we build our binaries, we deploy to a test environment, we test it, and then we move to production with our code. And sure, most of the cases it will be okay. But there is still always a difference between the production, the acceptance, the test environments, because you ship your code and the surrounding environment and configuration might be different. When you move to continuous deployment of the next phase of containers, you will have your source control, you will build your binaries, and you will bake a container image. So that container contains everything, and this will be published to some kind of repository. Docker Hub is the public one, but you can also have private repositories. So your container is there. And if it's there and it's approachable by other systems, they can just pull your image. And they can run it automatically without any further configuration. Your application will run there. So that's how we are going to do continuous delivery in the future. And for that, I have a demo, and I hope I have enough time to do it. Oh, that's great. I pressed the wrong button, the power button of my laptop. That's, oh well. Luckily, it didn't just reboot. Okay, so what did I do? First of all, I set up a machine in Azure, a Windows 2016 machine, CTP5 still, because the other one was, luckily for me, not released yet. Otherwise, I had to rebuild my demo. But this is the CTP5 of Windows 2016, because I want to show you that Docker is now also part of the Windows platform. We can run, and I'm running it right now, .NET 4.6 inside a Docker container on a Windows Server Core system. It's not as fast as on Linux yet, so that's a warning up front. But it's to give you an idea, an impression of what's possible on the next generation of the Windows platform. So I have this this Docker. So I have a program. So I will first show you that. It's a quite easy, simple program. So insert, and I can insert an income. So what I did is I created a tax calculation engine. I put in an income. I have a calculation that uses a certain percentage. I will just add it to an Azure queue. It will pick it up from the Azure queue. It will calculate, and it will return the result. So nothing special here. So I have 288 messages in my queue. So that's enough for me now. And I'm also able, of course, to read the top message on the queue and calculate the thing. The interesting part about containers and microservices and what do you like to call it, is that we don't have to think about deploying our solution in the traditional way. So it's not about we are going to deploy a whole web application with everything on it, and we are going to stop the servers, deploy a new version, start up the servers, or do something fancy with load balancing and switching over the traffic. With containers, it's something different. We can just publish a new version of the container. And the container can be really small and focus on one specific task. So in this case, I have a container that has one task only, and that's calculate the tax. It will start up, it will pick up the latest message, it will calculate the tax, and it will shut down. And because containers are very lightweight and simple, we can easily do that. So that makes my deployment model very easy, because when I have a new version of my calculation engine, I fix the bug, I just deploy a new version of my container, and then it will start up a new version of my container and do the magic there. So that is a difference from the traditional approach. So for that, I have created already a container. So if I do a Docker search, let me see, and I search for my own name, it will go to the public Docker Hub, and you can see that I have a container that's called Evan Osnabrug Azure Queue. And when I run that container, let me see. It will grab that image from the Docker Hub. It will build it on my host machine, which is now in Azure. it will start up my container, and it will run the text calculation inside that container. And then it's always hoping that it's that it works. And if not, I will just go go forth with the rest of my my demo. Okay, well, this is probably spinning up and waiting. So what I said, on Linux it's much faster. Okay, so I will skip that. What I can do to show you the pipeline is I start at the code, of course. So I have my Azure Q poster, that's my solution. And when I want to change something in my text calculator, for example, it's now 54%. I can maybe change it to 30%. Oh shit! I have to change to the right branch. So let me do that again. It's 11%. So let's change that to a Dutch rate. So I can now save it. I set up a build pipeline and a release pipeline so that it will automatically build a container, and then it will, with the release pipeline, it will package up my container and publish it to the Docker Hub. And what I wanted to show you is that when I run this in my command line, I have a way of doing this. I have the thing. So let me now copy, otherwise it goes wrong again. And Docker run. Where is it? Okay. It's not there. So then I will try to just do it. I have this Azure Q. I have an action that's start, and I have a start image that's my image that I created and that I will create. Okay, so this one is running. So I have just a loop that just runs to the queue, starts up a new container, does a calculation, and then starts up a new container, etc., etc. So when I'm in my code here, I can change it. And hopefully this one is showing something. So this is my 11%. So that container contained the 11% tax, and it's a bit slow, so it's still 11%. When we now go to the build, it's running. So my build is in progress. And this is publishing my artifact. So this is really separation. So it's creating the box with binaries, and then in my release tab, I'm creating the image and publish it to the Docker Hub. So this one succeeded. So if everything is well, my release is now triggered. So it's waiting. It will download the artifacts from the server or from the network share where you did it. And it's still 11%. So it's now uploading all my bits to the Docker host, which is my Windows 2016 Azure machine. It will upload it to the Docker daemon. And then it will build up layers. So it's always based on a base image. So it starts with the Windows Server Core, then it puts in some bits, it moves to a directory, it does some extra actions, etc., etc. And everything you do is a different layer within the container. And the great part is you can just pull a certain layer. So you can build on top of a base image that is already created, which makes it even more fast to do it. So this is the step 4. It's now uploading to the Docker Hub, and if everything goes well, we can see hopefully a new percentage, because that is published to the Docker Hub. My build process gets the latest version of that container, and then hopefully it will just show the Dutch text percentage. Yeah, it's here. So that's a thank you. So that's a complete different way of deploying your application, thinking of it as a container instead of the whole application. So I have 35 seconds left, so that's more than enough for my last slide. And that's the learning part. So we have the build part and the measure and the learn. And I'd like to ask you to stand up once more. And of course, I'm going to ask you to make even more noise than the first and the second time. So I count to three and then you make more noise. And then I end with my last slide and I thank you up front. Thank you very much. One, two, three. Thank you very much.